Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Lance Venable, and I represent the appellants MDY Industries and Michael Donnelly. I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. I hope to discuss this morning, Your Honors, first why MDY Industries could not have tortiously interfered with Blizzard's license agreements, and why the district court erred in finding that Michael Donnelly was personally liable. And then if I have any time remaining, I would like to discuss the remaining issues addressed in Blizzard's DMCA and copyright claims. Now, first, regarding the issue of tortious interference. The district court erred in our case because it held that Blizzard can unilaterally transform a lawful business activity into a tortious interference claim simply by telling the company that it can no longer sell its product. More specifically, Your Honors, Judge Campbell erred by holding that it was improper for MDY to reject Blizzard's demands so that MDY could protect its business and its contracts. It's just that simple, Your Honors. But under Arizona law, that is not tortious interference. Under Arizona law, it is not improper to protect a company's lawful and existing contracts, which my client clearly had, for several months, in fact. And in fact, my client, MDY, was privileged to do what he did to protect his business.
Well, what's your best case for that? The court went through the factors under Arizona law, and didn't really seem to address that argument, which I think you raised there as well. And so what's your best case under Arizona law that's an analogous sort of circumstance where an enterprise has contracts or has a business in place and then that's derivative of another one, because that's what your client was doing?
Your Honor, quite frankly, we are unaware of any cases that address that particular issue in Arizona or in any other state. I know that most of the cases deal with where there is an existing contract in place, and then perhaps the defendant, it becomes aware of that contract and then does something to tortiously interfere or act.
But the facts of this case, though, even if Blizzard did not clearly prohibit bots when MDY started selling Glider, isn't MDY still liable for tortious interference with contract for selling Glider after Blizzard clearly prohibited the bots?
Well, in our case, Your Honor, we look to the issue when Mr. Donnelly first began his business, and he made it very clear, we addressed this in the facts, that not only was there no prohibition, but what Mr. Donnelly did during his business was to take all the necessary steps to determine whether or not what he would do would impact Blizzard's agreements. And under Arizona law, and in particular, the Snow versus Western Savings case, the court has stated that if a person acts in good faith, believing that his acts are taken to protect his interest, that cannot be considered improper. And there are no facts that Blizzard has been able to cite to refute that presumption that we have in our facts, which is that at the time he began creating his add-on software, no different than any other company may decide to do it, to create another add-on software for, let's say, Microsoft Word. I think we addressed this in our briefs using the EndNote example, where there's nothing that would prohibit it, and then a company takes effort, spends a lot of time, man hours, to try to create something, and then out of the blue, a company decides, well, you know, we want to change our contract, we want to change the terms at which Blizzard can actually, that a company can actually decide that, that particular piece of software is no longer allowed.
As I understand Blizzard's argument, that Blizzard has the business model with all of these millions of players, and it says, abide by the rules of the game, don't cheat. And they can't expressly prevent every form of cheating that somebody could invent. MDY invents a new form of what, at least I guess, other players considered to be cheating, and so once they become aware of this cheating, they say, this is another form of cheating that we're prohibiting. So why can't they do that? I mean, wasn't it clear at the time when MDY was creating it that this was a form of cheating, or was it not?
No, it was not. In fact, Your Honor, not only did we say that, but Judge Campbell acknowledged that he said in his order after trial that it wasn't even clear to Mr. Donnelly until I think it was at least November of 2005 that Blizzard didn't even want him doing what he did. I know that the focus here is really sort of on this change in the contract, but I think really where Judge Campbell made his ruling was not so much on the question of whether the contract was changed, because the contract actually wasn't changed until this lawsuit was filed. And what really happened was that when the game was first in existence, there was no warden program. Okay, so when Mr. Donnelly created the software through MDY, he developed the software. It was open. It was honest. There was nothing in his software to actually hide itself. It was just out there. He sold it. There was never any attempt to try to hide what he was doing. In fact, that's how Blizzard was able to get a copy of his program. But where the problem came in was that without ever notifying him directly, Blizzard added its warden component to its software, which effectively eviscerated his business.
And what did he do?
Well, what he did was, at first he didn't know what had happened, but he investigated and he found out that they had added this part of its software, they had added this to the software.
And then he changed his so that Glider could avoid Warden.
Absolutely, but the issue here is, you know, why is it that Blizzard was privileged to do what it did? It eviscerated a valid and existing business. Why is it that if a third-party company decides to write an add-on software program, let's say EndNote, that works with Microsoft Word, and Microsoft wakes up one morning and says, you know, we just don't want EndNote to be used with our software. It causes delays. It makes people upset. They blame us. They call our tech support people, and they say, you know, this EndNote program, you guys need to fix it you guys need to fix your Microsoft Word program to work with this EndNote. And they say, well, you know what? What we'll do, instead of doing that, we'll just ban it. We will put a line in our contract that says, I'm sorry, it's gone. And then what is the company that makes EndNote supposed to do? Are they just supposed to quit? They have every right as a manufacturer of that software program to try to defend its business. They have a good faith basis, and in this case, so did my client, to try to protect the validity of its business. My client had thousands of customers who are all paying him on a monthly basis to use his software. He had contracts. Blizzard effectively interfered with his contracts by torpedoing the very business that he had.
So for purposes of the tortious interference analysis, are you saying that there wasn't evidence of an improper? I mean, where does that go? Is that the argument?
Yes, that's exactly what we're saying, Your Honor. There may, in fact, have been an avenue provided for people who use World of Warcraft to breach Blizzard's contracts. We don't dispute that. What we do say is that didn't happen until much later, until actually they changed their contract. But it's certainly our position that whatever interference was occurring, it could not have been tortious because it wasn't improper. And if we are, you know, if what we're saying here is that that companies like Blizzard can unilaterally, with the stroke of their pen, transform an activity that was proper, that wasn't illegal. I mean, there's no statute that prohibited bot software. You know, MDY's license agreement did not have anything in it that said bots are illegal. There was nothing with regard to that. Now, they'll dispute that. But at a minimum, well, that's a disputed issue of fact. And the court said that there was no reasonable jury could find that what my client did in order to protect his business was tortious interference.
Which gets to my question, which this was a part of the summary judgment determination. And are you saying there's a genuine issue of material fact, or are you saying that the court was wrong as a matter of law?
Well, we're saying that they're wrong as a matter of law, Your Honor, because we don't think there are any facts that could say that what he did in order to protect his business, which there was no evidence in the record to show that there was anything unlawful about what he was doing until Blizzard said so. And then once Blizzard said so, then all of a sudden, well, you know, this is bad for the game. This is really bad. Well, what are we going to do? We have to stop people like MDY Industries and Mr. Donnelly from doing this. But if we are going to make that rule, then I think the court needs to be able to articulate that, to say that, well, that's going to apply across the board. And then what you're going to do is you're going to put people who are in a position, like my client, who's an entrepreneur. There are thousands of entrepreneurs out there every day who develop third-party software. They create situations where they're creating new software that interacts with other people's software. And if we're going to say that it's okay for them to just unilaterally terminate them with the stroke of a pen, the magic language in a contract, that your software is no longer allowed, then this is what would happen. But it can't be improper, Your Honors, to react and say, I'm sorry, I disagree with what you are doing. I disagree with you putting a warden program in and stopping us. And that my response to that by saying, well, I'm going to hide that ability for you to be able to detect me and say that that's improper, that can't be improper, Your Honors. It just simply can't be. In fact, you know, one of the other examples, I know, you know, with regard to our DMCA claim, there's two other cases, the Lexmark case as well as the Chamberlain case.
Well, on that point, if we don't adopt the Federal Circuit's holding in Chamberlain, that a DMCA Section 1201A2 violation must have a nexus to infringement, can you still prevail?
Well, we believe, Your Honor, that
I know you say we should adopt Chamberlain, but if we don't, can you still prevail?
Well, before I get to that point, can I just finish my point with regard to tortious interference? Because I was just going to say that with regard to those cases factually are very similar to ours with regard to tortious interference. Here you had a third party manufacturing printer cartridges, and Lexmark tried to say, we don't want those anymore, and we're going to sue you for copyright infringement and DMCA violations. And the same thing also applied with the garage door openers in Chamberlain. They effectively tried to put someone out of business by just changing the language. In fact, the language existed in their contract from the beginning. And we can't have that happen where a company can just decide what's proper, what's not, what's legal, what's not, simply because they put it in their agreement. And especially when it's to someone who doesn't even sign off on that agreement, like my client did. I was going to get to my personal liability issue. Should I go with that, or do you want me to go with the DMCA?
Well, you can. Well, I just asked you a question about the DMCA, so I think you should answer that. And you might want to reserve 5 minutes just because there's appeals and cross appeals, so that
sure.
You can.
I did reserve my 5 minutes. And with regard to your question, no, we still believe it would be improper. We still would not be improper under the DMCA because, as we have said, that the issue focuses on whether or not the technological measure is actually controlling access to the work. And I think we made it very clear. We spelled this out as clearly as we could in our brief, that in this particular case, the Warden program is not there to protect access to its copyrighted works. It is there to protect against breaches of its contract. As we have said, that
doesn't it kick you off the server if the Warden resident detects bots or bot programs, then it kicks that user off of the server. So any of the copyrighted information or works that's coming from the server are being protected, isn't it?
Well, I would like to address that this way, Your Honor. If you look at the way the software was in the beginning, when there was no Warden program, the copyrighted works that Blizzard claims rights to were unadulterated and unfettered available to anybody who wanted access to them, whether it's the literal elements, the non-literal elements, access to its server, whatever. When Warden is working in the background, you still have complete and unadulterated access to whatever copyrighted works are available.
I thought it was just on the game client. I thought that you pay a license fee, right, to get onto their server and to get the stream of information, the interaction.
Yes.
And so if you're precluded, my understanding was that the Warden, having detected the bots, would then preclude you from having access to their server and the information from the server.
Yes, but that only occurs after the fact, Your Honor. It only occurs after you've logged in and you know, anybody who has a password, which is also the only people who would be using my client's software, has free reign to whatever it is that Blizzard is claiming rights to.
Well, I know your theory is there's a difference between preventing access and being kicked off and terminating access. But let's say that we don't see that distinction. Isn't it then the case that Warden will kick off the user if they detect the bots?
Yes, it will. But, Your Honor, that is only dealing with the issue of whether the bot exists. And that is merely a breach of their contract, according to them. This is not the Digital Millennium Contract Act. This is the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. We are concerned about whether or not we are having access to something. There has to be that nexus. There has to be some connection to what the technological measure is actually doing to prevent access to the work.
And are you saying that the information coming from the server, from the Blizzard server, is not copyrighted? Is that your position?
Well, we've argued that we did raise that argument, but even assuming that it is, Your Honors, it still doesn't change the analysis.
Why is that? Because it would seem if I can no longer access the information coming from the servers so that it's not copied onto my RAM memory, then it has, in fact, protected access to copyrighted work.
It has, Your Honor, but under Lexmark, and I think Lexmark Court is very, very, they explain this very well, that their efforts to try to prevent the copying is not consistent with what Congress did when it implemented the DMCA.
So that gets to Judge Callahan's question, that we need to follow Chamberlain in order for you to prevail.
And Lexmark. Lexmark, I think, is even more apropos because it deals with the issue of you know, is what my client doing is he's circumventing that technological measure to gain access to a copyrighted work to actually infringe the copyrights, which is really, like I said, it's the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, not the Digital Millennium Breach of Contract
Act. But we said in MAI that copying into RAM constitutes copying for purposes of the Copyright Act.
And, Your Honor, I will concede that if what this court finds is that that's allowable, then there really isn't much left to be able to argue. But we believe that that is very inconsistent with what Congress had requested be the case in determining this. It was to prevent digital piracy. This is not digital piracy. This is Blizzard's efforts to try to control third-party software from being used with its game, which at worst is a breach of contract. And like I said, the access that you get when you gain access with the password, you have access all to the copyrighted work. If my client wanted to pirate it, or anybody else who has access to the software, Warden doesn't change that. It doesn't prevent that type of copying. I see I'm down to 3.5 minutes, Your Honor.
If you want, you can argue Mr. Donnelly's personal liability in your rebuttal.
Okay, thank you very much,
Your Honor. Since we've got both of those going on. Good morning.
Please, the court. Good morning. My name is Christian Janetsky, and I represent the appellee, Blizzard Entertainment. I suppose I'll start with the tortious interference points that counsel for MDY and Mr. Donnelly began his argument with. And the court properly recognized that on appeal, MDY does not challenge at all the district court's thorough analysis of the 7 applicable factors under Arizona law for impropriety, and raises only a separate argument that his client was somehow privileged to continue encouraging breaches of contract, enabling breaches of contract, and helping users fraudulently conceal them because Blizzard had not anticipated his exact program before he developed it.
What do you do with this point that the contract wasn't changed until the litigation started?
Yes, Your Honor, I think there are 3 responses. First is that MDY offers no authority and was candid this morning in not being able to offer any, that even assuming arguendo that the TOU did not prohibit bots.
Well, I guess the whole thing is what MDY is saying when it began marketing Glider. Tell us, was there any provision of, I don't know if you say EULA or whatever, or TOU, did any of those prohibit Glider?
Yes, Your Honor, that was my second and third point.
Okay, which ones? Tell me specifically.
Yes, Your Honor. The district court opinion on summary judgment held that Glider violated 2 separate provisions of the TOU. One of them, in that version when Glider was first developed, prohibited cheats and other unauthorized third-party programs, but did not specifically say bots. The other provision prevented using programs that mine information from the game, and the court found that Glider equally violated that provision. That provision was verbatim present in both the TOU in operation in June 2005 when Glider was developed, and was still present verbatim in the operative TOU that the district court used as the basis for its decision on summary judgment. I would also point out that it has been our position from the beginning that the inclusion of the specific word bots is not the magic moment in time that Glider became was a violation even of that provision. Because,
well, I'm concerned if we have that non-use of bots is a license condition, even though bots doesn't show up anywhere initially. So Glider users commit copyright infringement. Would there be any limit on Blizzard's ability to label whatever conduct it wants as a license condition, the violation which is a copyright infringement?
Yes, Your Honor, I think the cases from the Ninth Circuit, and then there are a number of instructive district court cases within this circuit that analyze that what a court should do is look at the face of the license agreement itself and determine whether the provisions at issue were made expressly conditions or limitations on the license as opposed to...
Well, it's a condition of my license that the user has to brush his teeth every morning. And if he doesn't, it's a copyright infringement because that's a condition of my copyright.
Your Honor, whether or not the user brushes his teeth, I would submit it does not go to, as the Nebula Court says, how the copyrighted material may be used, what the limitations on the use of the copyrighted work are. Also, here, obviously, that's not that case. We're talking about the ability to load the World of Warcraft client into RAM to make a copy, which is clearly Blizzard conditions your right to make that copy on compliance, continuing ongoing compliance with license restrictions, including those carved out in its agreement as limitations on your use of the service.
So it has to go to the use of the software, or that it can't be a condition if it doesn't go to the use of the software.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that the cases that we've cited in our brief make clear there are really two elements. One, you have to expressly state in your license that it is a limited license and a conditional license. There's no dispute that we've done that here. And the second is to evaluate whether the provision itself is a condition or covenant. And the cases have said that it's a condition where it goes to what sorts of restrictions on your use, the manner in which the work may be used. I don't believe MDY has offered any cases in its briefing on appeal that hold to the contrary or suggest that a different outcome would be compelled here, and I believe Judge Campbell thoroughly analyzed the relevant case law and the relevant license here and reached the right decision on that.
So your position is that all of the rules and regulations, all of the rules of the game in the EULA and the TOU are conditions on scope because they all affect how you use the game? So all of those are conditions precedent to using the license?
No, Your Honor. We, as the district court's order reflects, the argument below that, and the court's findings are that Section 4, which is titled Limitations on the Use of the Service, and which addresses actions more in concurrent with Blizzard's conference of copyright rights, are part and parcel of the limited conditional license.
And does
in
that
Section
have the
5,
bots?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Does that have the bots in that?
Yes, Your Honor.
About? Is this the terms of use or the EULA?
Terms of use, Section 4.
Okay, and that's incorporated by reference in the EULA's
yes, position?
Yes,
Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. And the EULA makes clear that the conditional grant of license is subject to continuing compliance with both agreements. You can't play the game until you've scrolled through the entirety of both agreements and assented to them.
Because the actual EULA doesn't put that as a condition precedent. It just has a cross-reference, and you'll comply with all of the terms of use. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, and Section 4 of the EULA mirrors... I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
The other point I was going to make is that Section 5, which the district court found were contractual covenants, is entitled Rules of Conduct. And the court read the license consistent with the way it's drafted. Section 5, unlike Section 4, which is subject to the express conditions and limitations, states that Blizzard may reserves the right to take certain disciplinary measures in the game for violations of those lesser rules of conduct of how one conducts themselves within the context of the game.
So the thing that I have trouble with, and maybe it's because I'm not sufficiently embedded in the World of Warcraft, is essentially you're saying if a player cheats, they're infringing copyright. It's a copyright infringement. And I find that a little bit humorous because I'm thinking of, you know, the Scrabble game or the Monopoly game, and we'll say, oh, okay, if you cheat at Scrabble, then you're infringing the copyright. Why isn't that under state law, which generally disfavors conditions precedent because of the concern about forfeitures? Why aren't those just covenants so that you could go after the user for breach of contract?
I think there are a couple of answers. First, the Sun Microsystems, Microsoft cases, NetBeulah, SOS, Payday, those Ninth Circuit and District Court cases that follow them make the point which I made previously that the proper test is to evaluate and that the same license agreement can contain both covenants and conditions.
Right,
and
none of them were on cheating, right? They were all core copyright uses, that making another copy of the program or something.
Yes, or using it on an operating system that was not permitted under the license, or using it on more computers, which we think are very akin to what we're talking about here, which is not, It is cheating in the game, but it is also loading a software program that runs simultaneously with our copyrighted software program and forces users to take actions in the game without human participation, sullies that experience. So we believe it's a little different than perhaps using a person's name as your character name that's obscene, for instance, which would fall under the rules of conduct. But if I can go back, Your Honor, to the federal state law question, because I know this was brought up on the both previous arguments as well, and I think that the SOS Payday case from this court is very instructive on this matter, because what SOS Payday in the district court in SOS construed, or at least held as a rule, that it should construe any ambiguity in the contract against the drafter, who, because it was a copyright license, was the copyright owner. And what SOS Payday said was, while that presumption would normally hold when we're talking about a copyright license and agreement, that is, copyright is is the exclusive province of federal law, and that this circuit interprets copyright licenses consistent with the tenets of copyright law, which the primary purpose of which is to protect, to the full extent applicable by law, the rights of the copyright owner, and it rejected applying that presumption.
So it says we look at federal policy, and so I was sort of scratching my head, what is the federal policy that would say a not cheating rule is something we want to protect the copyright holder's rights?
I think that the federal policy is that copyright owners, if we go back to our first principles, copyright owners created the work. Blizzard spent years creating the World of Warcraft online experience. There was testimony at trial that Blizzard fine-tuned for years every aspect of that online experience.
But the experience isn't copyrighted. I mean, it's just the program and the elements. It's not the experience. This is just an add-on program, like opposing counsel was saying, EndNote. Why isn't it like that?
Well, I believe, I would take issue and say that the interactive display of the audio-visual mm-hmm. elements and the story text, that combination of elements is what our protected right extends to. And as a policy matter, we confer the right to make the copies. And if it was not a copyright infringement to load a copy into RAM in excess of a license, then you know, we would have would be a contract issue, not a copyright issue. But here, the activity that's happening is a loading into RAM in conjunction with something that exceeds the scope of the license, and that right under the law of this circuit, I think, is
but only because of whether if it's a scope rather only because of the contract that says don't play with bots, because it doesn't actually copy your program, it just adds something to it. Isn't that right?
You copy our program into RAM in excess of the scope of the license.
Well, if we were to find, and I'm not saying that we are or whatever, but if this panel were to say it were a covenant as opposed to a condition, then there would not be a copyright violation, correct?
If the provision that is
the cheating,
exceeding,
the bot, yeah.
Yes, if the bot does not exceed the scope of our limited license, then no, it would not be an infringement.
All right. Now, I have a question on Warden. Why should we say that Warden effectively controls World of Warcraft when it does not detect or prevent against copying?
It does prevent against copying, Your Honor. What the district court found is that Warden, in the two parts, the scan DLL at the first check and the resident component, which subsequently continues to check as you load new copyrighted elements into play on the server, blocks access to anyone that can't provide the key, which in this case is a glider-free or other bot or cheat-free copy of the game. If you cannot get access to those elements, you cannot make a copy of them.
So what's the application of information? How do you understand that part of the rule of the DMCA?
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that the district court got this right, and the facts at trial were, and I don't believe there's any dispute as to the facts as to how Warden works, that what it does is it runs a process when you log on to Blizzard servers, both at the first moment of log on, and then again, periodically, while your client is running in RAM. Warden is software technology that applies information, applies a process to the client. It asks the client to tell it certain things about segments of memory in the client that where Blizzard has identified there will be certain signatures of code.
But it's just looking for a negative. I mean, the way it's drafted in the DMCA, it sounds like a, you know, apply information. You provide a password, like the secret handshake thing in the printer.
In actuality, the way encryption schemes work, which no one would dispute are at the core of the DMCA, is it asks a question. And it asks a hashed value question, and the encryption key has to come back with the right answer. It's the same thing that's happening here. We're asking a question of that client. We're asking you to warrant to us by applying the right segment of code in the manner it's supposed to look like to gain access. And if you provide us something that doesn't look like what it's supposed to look like, you're not allowed entry. The Ticketmaster case, and there are a number of Craigslist cases where websites use a CAPTCHA, where you have to, you know, peer at the little characters manually and enter them in before you can access the website. That's to prevent automated bots who cannot read those from accessing the website. There, again, it's you have to apply the right information. You have to put in the right numbers. If you try to come up with a program that gets you past putting in the right numbers, then you've circumvented the measure.
And you're saying that the resident warden, which then blocks access to the server, is it the copying of the information from the server that you're saying is the copyrighted material that's being protected?
There are two issues here. One, we believe, and this bleeds a bit into our cross appeal, that we believe that the continued loading of the code into RAM that warden blocks, that should be an effective measure. Even when it only blocks it when you're connected to the server. That would be our cross-appeal issue under B1. What the district court found under B1 is that because the resident component stops you from gaining access to the further copyrighted elements that you cannot see once the resident component blocks you, that when you use Glider, you're able to evade that impermissibly, gain unauthorized access to that content, and then you have the ability to make a recording of it. Just like someone who uses the bot to evade the CAPTCHA on Ticketmaster can then download the copy of the pages of the website, take screenshots of it. The fact that the CAPTCHA for Ticketmaster doesn't prevent you or I, if we pop in manually the CAPTCHA and access the website, we're allowed to take screenshots and make copies of that. But the person who has circumvented the measure is not. B1 only requires the copyright owner to prevent, limit, or restrict a work or portions thereof.
So do we need to follow the district court's, I think it was speculation, I don't know if there was evidence that was introduced, that somebody could hypothetically take a capture the play. Do we have to make that assumption in order to find a B1 violation?
I would say first that I don't believe it was an assumption. I believe it was conceded by MDY at trial. I believe it is independent grounds for affirming the B1, the B1 holding. And here we're talking just B1 and not A2, which is just an access protection, not a copying. But I also believe that the continued loading of the code into RAM that the resident component blocks when you're connected to the server is a protectable measure under B1 because it restricts your ability to copy. If we remember the copying, assuming the district court's ruling on copyright infringement is affirmed, the use of Glider in conjunction with WoW is itself an infringing use.
And you might want to save a little time for your cross appeal. Do you want to save some time? That's up to you. Otherwise, you won't have any time, and they'll get to say something.
Okay, I'll reserve my final 3 minutes.
Okay.
If your honors have other questions.
Thank you.
Your honors, I just have just addressed a couple of his points that he raised. Earlier you had asked what were my best cases. I think I was a little bit confused about the question. The two best cases that deal with the issue of privilege are the Wyatt v. Rutt construction case and the Snow versus Western Savings. That deals with the issue of what happens later when you have to try to make an effort to save your business. Are you privileged to be able to do that? Also, what Mr. Janeski was referring to about this whole limitations on use, well, use is not a right under the 106 Act under copyright. There are five exclusive rights. Use is not one of them. So this whole concept of protecting use and then, you know, equating that to a copyright infringement when that's somehow violated, that does not get you there. The other thing he raised was about the issue of the contract. And I think he raises a good point that if we are simply just going to look and say, well, here's where they said, here's where the conditions, and here's where the covenants. What Mr. Janetsky says is that in Blizzard's original contract is that you have to agree to all of the terms in order to use the software. All of them. It's right here. They don't dispute that. And then what he says, well, you know, when we asked him at summary judgment, well, if you named your character Michael Vick, for instance, and that you weren't Michael Vick, would that be a violation? Well, why couldn't they just put Michael Vick under the terms in the limitations on use and consider that a copyright infringement? And at a minimum, the contract itself is vague, because if you're going to say that they all have to be complied with, but then you find out later, well, at Blizzard's decision, that they can say, well, no, we didn't really mean these. We just meant the ones in Section 4. How is anybody supposed to understand that?
Well, because you have limited time, assuming that MDY is liable, just assuming for tortious interference with contract, what's your best argument that Mr. Donnelly is not personally liable?
Personally liable, Your Honor, is that the court erred when it applied the improper standard. It applied strict liability to Mr. Donnelly's personal liability. It basically cited to the dance hall cases. And the dance hall cases deal with the issue of when the legality of what is actually going on is not in question. In that case, there was a dance hall owner that basically buried his head in the sand and decided that he didn't want to know what the people who were using his dance hall, what type of music they were using, because some of those music, the music that they were using violated the Copyright Act because they were playing them without license. In that case, there was no issue as to the legality of whether or not that was a violation of the copyright. Therefore, you want to protect the copyright owner in that case. What they should have done, and the court actually acknowledged that there was uncertainty as to the legality of the situation here. The court, in fact, Judge Campbell said that many times in his order, that he wasn't even sure that what he was doing here was a violation of the copyright. When that's the case, you have to look at the Ong Hing and the Murphy Tugboat cases, which deal with focusing the analysis on whether or not there is the legal certainty or uncertainty of the act. And when there is uncertainty as to the legality of the act, then the court has to look to whether or not the officer of the corporation acted commercially reasonable under the circumstances. And I think the big difference here is that if the dance owner had just investigated, he would have learned that there were copyright violations being committed. He could have asked whether or not the music that was going to be used was actually did you have a license? But he didn't. In our case, no matter what Mr. Donnelly would have done to investigate his efforts, which he did, by the way, there's no way he would have known whether or not what he was doing was legal or not. Because even under the circumstances here, that's why we're here. This is a very, very difficult case. And do we really want to put somebody who makes an effort to try to come up with a new software program, who takes all the good faith efforts to investigate what he wants to do, and then decides at that point that, yes, I want to sell my program, and then decides to protect it, that guy should be personally liable? Ong Hing says it shouldn't be the case, and so does Murphy Tugboat. And one last thing, Your Honor, about the DMCA. The Blizzard has not been able to cite any case where under the DMCA, either 1201A2 or 1201B1, where the circumvention, where there's liability for the DMCA, where the circumvention is gaining access to something that the person didn't already have access to. When there is access to something that you've already got access to by, in this case, purchasing the password and gaining access to everything that's there, then we're in the realm of Lexmark and we're in the realm of Chamberlain. And those cases said that by purchasing the printer, you gain access to the work, therefore you can't be a violator. And in the other case, by purchasing the door opener, the garage door, that you gain access to the code. Circumvention didn't have anything to do with piracy, and therefore you shouldn't be held responsible under the DMCA.
All right. Thank you for your argument. Your time's expired.
Your Honors, if I may, I address a couple points that I don't want to stray beyond.
Well, you know, you can use your time for whatever you want, because we sort of had a loose cross appeal. We didn't separate them, so you can use it for whatever you want.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll try to be succinct. First, Mr. Venable said that as to the Section 4 of our Terms of Use, that it says limitations on use of the service and says that use is not one of the protected rights of the Copyright Act. In this case, it is. Use equates with copying into RAM. That's how you use the program, is you make a copy in RAM. And I think this dovetails nicely with his citations to Lexmark, which appellants would say it supports their case on the DMCA, because it's just a restriction on use. In Lexmark, there was a printer, and what the court found was the authentication sequence, which was the protection measure there, only prevented you from using the printer. What's interesting is Lexmark itself specifically distinguished that case in making that holding from a case where, for example, the example used video game software, where the use of the work is what gives you access to the expressive video audio-visual elements of the game. So I think Lexmark pretty clearly would have reached a different decision in this case. What Warden does is block your access to Blizzard's copyrighted work if you don't supply the proper information to it. It doesn't disable Glider. It doesn't break Glider and then allow you to come in and play World of Warcraft. That's really how I believe Appellant is characterizing it, but that's not what it does. It does exactly what the DMCA was designed to prevent, which is to allow copyright owners to prevent, which is blocking access to their works. The last point on personal liability of Mr. Donnelly, that argument largely hinges on the same argument as to the impropriety, I think, and what the rules were when Mr. Donnelly started developing Glider. I think it's very important to note that it was an undisputed fact of record that from the inception of his marketing of this Glider program, Mr. Donnelly himself went onto the Google AdWords program and bought the sponsored search terms World of Warcraft Bot and World of Warcraft Cheat. He bought those terms because people looking for his program were going to be likely to run searches for cheats and for bots equally. I believe the undisputed evidence of record is what the district court found, that he knew from the very beginning that this activity was violative of Blizzard's contracts. And if he didn't know then when he was marketing it as a cheat, 3 months after he developed the program and before he developed any sort of circumvention technique, Warden blocked it. At that point, he had fledgling sales, a new program. He was under no uncertain terms violating Blizzard's contract. Rather than moving his business in a different direction, he chose to redouble his efforts to study Warden, learn how to circumvent it, learn how to have his users conceal their breaches from Blizzard. And Mr. Donnelly personally engaged in each and every one of those acts. And the law is, despite the fact that you have a corporate foreman or an officer, if you participate personally in those acts, you are personally liable.
All right. Thank you for your argument. This matter will stand submitted. Thank both counsel for your helpful argument in this matter. This court's just going to take a brief recess of 5 minutes, and we'll come back and hear the last case.